Today on Ancient Faith Presents, we have the privilege of talking with Dr. Maria Curry. Dr. Curry is the author of Orthodox Christian children's books, including The Christina Goes to the Holy Land, Walking the Footsteps of Christ. She's a graduate of Hellenic College, Harvard University, and Boston University, and has a Doctor of Education degree. And we're talking to Maria today because she is a Christian living in the Holy Land, and we have an opportunity to get a perspective on what it's like to be a follower of Christ these days in the Holy Land. And Maria, this is not your first time on Ancient Faith Radio, so we welcome you back.
Thank you very much. Thank you for allowing me always to share a Christian witness from a very sacred place where Christ was born.
Well, it is a sacred place, and I think it's very important that our listeners understand some of the realities of what it's like to live there now as a Christian. And Maria, just for a little bit of perspective here, how long have you lived in the Holy Land?
Well, actually, I've returned to my husband's village of Taibeh in the early 90s, especially after 1993, after the Oslo Agreement was made, where we thought Israel and Palestine were going to make peace. So since 1995, I've been living full-time in the village of Taibeh, half hour outside of Jerusalem, but I do come to the United States every fall before Christmas, promoting the Christina books, trying to put them out in church bookstores.
All right, and so you mentioned that Taibeh is outside of Jerusalem, and it is in the area known as the West Bank?
Yeah, the modern name for where I live is the West Bank. The biblical name is Biblical Judea, at the outskirts of Judea where Samaria starts. So this is one of the most ancient places in Palestine, actually, where I live. Taibeh is the modern name. Ephraim is the biblical name, and we're mentioned in the Gospel of John 11, verse 54. Currently, we are the only 100% kind of Christian location, Christian village, where 100% of the residents are Christian in the West Bank next to Israel and Palestine. We're the only ones that have that unique location where we've survived many wars and occupations and throughout the 2,000 years of history being a Christian place since Christ walked into the village right before his crucifixion. So we're known as the Village of Retreat.
Wow. Just think about that, and all the more reason why we wanted to talk with you today, because there have been changes down through the years, and you know, it's interesting, in the news this past week, we learned of the death of Ariel Sharon, and of course, many of our listeners would know that name, even though he has not been in the news in the last several years because of his health condition, and he was in a coma. He did pass just this past week, and this is a name that is significant to the Middle East, and although some would view Ariel Sharon as a proponent of peace and reconciliation, there are others who would have a different view of what he meant to the region. And I wonder, Maria, if you could just share some of your perspective on what Ariel Sharon in particular, how he impacted the Middle East and Christians.
Well, actually, for us, Ariel Sharon and the period under Sharon, we've suffered brutally. And not only in the early 80s was he the instigator and the general behind the massacres in the Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon, but for me and my location in September 28, 2000, when Ariel Sharon walked into the Islamic holy site in Jerusalem, it was the start of the uprising, because it was a message that Jerusalem will be controlled by Israel, Jerusalem will be 100% Jewish. So when he walked into the Islamic holy site with thousands of soldiers, thousands of policemen, it was the outbreak of a great violence that we haven't recuperated from. So 13 years for us of no change on the ground, where the peace talks are like at a deadlock.
Well, you know, we do love and pray for all men, and Ariel Sharon is certainly no exception, but yet there are realities, aren't there, of what some of the suffering has been.
And you know, John, I mean, living on the ground there as a Christian, this is the most important thing that we try to practice out, not just love for neighbor, love for enemy, because we do suffer greatly from just basic things like no freedom of movement, checkpoints everywhere, being locked up behind the wall. So, I mean, at a time like this, where for us, who we view as a very brutal, cruel leader that we suffered under his regime, we do say that may God rest his soul in peace, because at the end, this is what Christ is asking us for, to express prayer and love for our enemy. This is easier said than done, of course, because here in America, you live with people that might bring you a basket of flowers at Thanksgiving or a bottle of wine at Christmas. It's easy for you to be friendly and kind and loving to your neighbor. But for us on the ground, when we're each and every single day violated from our basic human rights, it seriously takes all of Christ's love to be in our hearts, all of Christ's peace to be in our hearts in order to react back peacefully. Because people are simply, the army, the government is simply treating Palestinians, whether they're Christians or Muslims, in a very cruel, brutal, like last-class citizens, basically treated as animals.
It's a reality, and you've articulated it very well, and we appreciate that. So talk to us about Taiba in particular, and what do you face day-to-day in terms of just your everyday needs, travel, shopping, in light of the settlement and some of the restrictions that you face?
Well, currently in Taiba, it's like all Christian villages, we suffer from no freedom of movement, locked behind the wall. The settlements are just getting bigger and bigger. In Taiba, we're being closed in by three illegal settlements all around them. Settlements means Jewish homes for Jews only. Bethlehem, for example, is being circled in and closed in by 22 illegal Israeli settlements with a whole wall all around it. It's a huge, big prison. The settlements and the Israeli government control the borders, the roads, the natural resources. For us in Taiba, what that means is like for 5 days in the week straight, 5 days, no water, while the settlements all around us do get water 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So this is an unequal, unfair distribution of natural resources, because as you can understand, if all people were going to do without water, you'd say, okay, this is what we're doing to prolong the water use. This is what we're doing to make sure everyone has water. But when you cut off water just on Palestinian villages and you let another group have water, this is the bias. This is the pure discrimination.
And just trying to think of it in terms of how both sides would view this. You know, someone once said that you can't slice bread so thin that there aren't two sides.
The other side is that Israel has a great dream to make 100% Jewish homeland. They will continue to build settlements in this small 22% of the land because, as you know, 78% of the land is Israel proper, the green line. So we're only talking about 22% of the land. It's a very small part. But the dream of Israel is to create 100% Jewish homeland, so their ethnic cleansing policies are going to continue. And they view Palestinians as Arabs, and they don't mind where they go. They can transfer and go anywhere to any other Arab country. But for someone like my husband, David Khoury, who was the mayor of Taiba for 8 years, he's no longer the mayor, but he was born in the village. His grandfather was the parish priest in the village and served the church, and his first cousin now, Father David Khoury, serves the church. Long history of service to the community. The roots go back 500 years of the Khoury family, the Khoury, the extended family, and the village itself being Christian 2,000 years since Christ walked into the village and the first converts were baptized and took on Christ. Most Palestinian Christians do trace their roots back to the disciples. So I meant to say this is a very controversial issue. I'm only sharing my view, what it's like as a Christian to be living in a Christian village and to be suffering under Israeli occupation. But of course, there is another side in Israel's effort to make 100% Jewish homeland. But even with their effort to make 100% Jewish homeland and an Israeli state, why does it have to be cleaned up from everyone else? Why can't we have basic human rights for all people, Christian, Jews, Muslim, secular people? Why can't everyone be treated equal, just like all the efforts in America have been done to treat people equal of all genders, of all colors?
So you do see a peaceable solution that could be negotiated and worked out where all people could live in peace and have the freedom of movement?
God willing, that keeps us our hope. That helps us wake up every day and keep hoping that peace will come and basic human rights will come for all people. on the Israeli side and on the Palestinian side, we have a lot of regular people that want a future, that want prosperity for our children. But we have the fanatics on the Palestinian side. We have the fanatics on the Israeli side. And they're swallowing up our voices because violence gets more attention than regular people working hard to hard on face-to-face projects, people-to-people projects.
Yeah, that's very, very well put, because, we have to think in terms of the people that are just day-to-day, normal, peace-loving individuals and families trying to live their lives in peace. And then you have the fanatics, the radicals on both sides, where violence is more the norm and discrimination and constant fighting.
What I want to say about that, John, is that most Muslim people happen to be very peaceful people. In Palestine, we have Muslims and Christians going to school, sitting to school together, praying. But ever since the efforts to have a war on terror and go get the terrorists, we as Christians living among Muslims have suffered deeply because the Muslim people have become more fundamental and more fanatic. The whole campaign on go get the terrorists has made more and more Muslim people more fundamental because they want to protect their identity and they want to prove who they are. So this whole campaign has been very terrible for us. But we want to have free access into Jerusalem. Going back to the illegal settlements around me, they freely go in and out of Jerusalem. We as Palestinians, I'm a Greek Orthodox born in Greece, but I follow all Palestinian rules because I live there. I'm married to a Palestinian. So Palestinians need a permit to enter Jerusalem. So again, this is a discriminatory policy that not all people entering Jerusalem need a permit. Only Palestinians need a permit. So for us, we need free access to worship in the very place where Christ was crucified and resurrected. And the most important miracle continues to happen there every year on Holy Saturday, the miracle of the Holy Fire. And I continue to remind the Christian world to pay attention to what's happening in the Middle East, because Christians are suffering deeply. The Middle East is being cleaned up from Christian people, and we need to pay attention to our government voting in a most balanced way when it comes to issues in the Middle East and issues on Israel and Palestine.
Well, it's so sad when you think about the heritage of Christianity in the Middle East, the place where Christ walked, where he lived, where he died, where he was buried, and where he rose again. And these are holy places for Christians, and you have such a heritage there in Taiba and those other regions where Christians would like to help celebrate and venerate some of these holy sites, and yet they are not allowed to go in. Maria, what have you noticed, or do you have any statistics to share with us in terms of the Christian population in the Middle East and how it has declined over the years?
Well, specifically in Palestine, we're less than 2% Christian population. So out of the 4 million people that live in Gaza and in the West Bank, we're basically down to 1.6%. Inside Israel proper as well, the Christian population is less than 2%. Christian people, as you know, because of the war in Iraq, 1 million Christian people have fled Iraq. And now in Syria, unfortunately, when churches are being burned because of the war, when Christian people are burned alive in Egypt, Christians are going to safer places, especially where they can put bread on the table and have freedom and democracy. So this is quite sad that throughout the years our Christian population is depleting.
Yeah, it's a trend that has been happening throughout the Middle East, and we've talked on Ancient Faith Radio in the past about Syria and some of the challenges and the civil war there and what it's meant for Christians. We've talked about Egypt and Iraq and some of these other regions, and then right here in the Holy Land itself, you have this decline of the Christian population and the difficulty that Christians face who live there and whose family can be traced all the way back to the days of Christ himself. Well, on a more positive note, Maria, can you tell us a little bit about the church there in Taiba, St. George?
In St. George Taiba, we are working very hard, you know, to maintain our Christian community with helping people with affordable housing. So, of course, since 2000, I've been working on the Taiba Housing Project. We have roofed 24 skeleton units where people through the metropolis of Boston can support Taiba housing. That has been a great blessing to give people hope to finish houses on their own. They put in their own kitchens, their own bathrooms. This has helped 24 families. We continue to help pay tuitions for children to go to school locally. We have two schools, the Taiba Orthodox School, the Greek Orthodox School, and the Latin School. So the Taiba Education Fund supports 15 children in registration fees, and we support $1,000 for a college student. While my husband was the mayor, the Taiba Oktoberfest, the village festival, helped create jobs for people. We want to find a way to continue to doing that, where we invite people to the village and they end up selling, the local people end up selling honey and oil and embroidery and all of the local goods. This has been just a creative way to try to survive under closure and under oppressed conditions. So with the Taiba Orthodox Club and with our local community, we're trying to maintain our community, and we welcome people to come and visit us and see with their own eyes what's happening. So we pray for peace and stability. So if people are as close as Jerusalem, which is a half hour away, that they would come and also see the living stones of the Holy Land and not just the churches and the chapels. And that has been very challenging because the American government continues to have the travel warning that American citizens should not come to the West Bank. And we've suffered from that. I'm trying very hard to inspire my own schoolmates and classmates from Helena College to come and visit Taiba.
What a wonderful encouragement that would be, because Christians here in the United States visit the Holy Land regularly, and they go to see the same sites that our friends in the West Bank would love to have the freedom to see. And what an encouragement it would be for those in the United States who are making plans to visit the Holy Land to take a little time, extra time, to visit the Christians in Taiba and to attend services at St. George and to be a participant in some of the community activities that are happening there. Let me give a website just so people can visit the St. George site, at least virtually on the web. It's St. George Taiba. Now, Saint is spelled out, S-A-I-N-T. George Taiba is T-A-Y-B, as in boy, E-H. St. George Taiba .org. And you can learn more there about Dr. Maria Curry, as well as the activities of the parish and what's happening in the community.
And with the new hotel that we have going up, the Taiba Golden Hotel, we hope to inspire people to come and to visit us and see with their own eyes. Because right down we look, down we see the Mount of Temptation, and that's where our Lord fasted and prayed for 40 days to teach us to be strong and say no to the evil. And so that's just 10 minutes up from the Mount of Temptation. And on the other side, I also see the Jordan Valley, and that's where Saint Mary of Egypt spent more than 40 years of her life asking for forgiveness for the Lord. So truly it's a special place. And I inspire people to come and see how beautiful it is and keep praying for peace.
Mm. Wow, indeed. And those of you who have children, look for Maria's children's books. Tell us just briefly about the series that you've created, Maria.
Well, starting with Christina Goes to Church to Try to Explain Symbolism, I have a brand new reprint of one of my books this year, and it's Christina's counting book. So as children learn to count in different languages and have fun counting crosses, on the right-hand side, they will get Orthodox value and explanation of symbolism. For example, on the censer, the 12 bells standing for the 12 disciples that spread the good news that Christ was born for us and to save us from our sins. And so while children have fun counting, they'll get simple explanation of some of our deep Orthodox values and traditions.
Well, just do a search on the web for Christina Goes to the Holy Land, and the author again is Maria Curry, K-H-O-U-R-Y. And Maria, what a joy to talk with you today. Our prayers are with you, your family, and the community there in Taiba. And God bless you as you make plans to return home.
Thank you very much. Thank you for giving me your time, John. God bless your work. And I look forward to giving you a tour one day in Taipei, God willing.
Oh, what a pleasure that would be. We'll look forward to that.
Thank you.